Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The Rosetta mission, which was the first probe ever to land on the surface of a comet last week, had no people aboard. But if it had, and if they were American, Jim Locke might have cleared them for duty.
Dr. Locke is a NASA flight surgeon, which, despite its name, does not involve conducting surgery while flying on a spaceship. But what it does involve is just about as interesting. The UW-Milwaukee graduate was back at his alma mater recently, and he joined us in the studio. Jim, welcome to Lake Effect.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
What does a flight surgeon do for NASA? What are the kinds of duties that you're called upon to do on a daily basis?
First off, you know, they call us flight surgeons, and everybody, when they hear that, they think, oh, well, how are you cutting on people in the airplane? And, you know, really, flight surgeon is a historical military title. We really are not surgeons per se, but, you know, we're flight physicians. My title is actually I'm a medical officer in the federal government. Our primary duties are to take care of the astronauts, and my duties also entail taking care of our non-astronaut flight crews and some of our mission control flight directors and folks like that.
Now, are you on flights with them, or are you ground-based seeing them before and after missions?
I am not on the flight with them, so I don't fly in space. I do fly in our aircraft with all the crews, and the main purpose of that is, you know, seeing them in their work environment to see how they're doing. And it is surprising. You get to learn a lot about somebody by flying with them. So that's really the historical reason, but there's also a practical side to us flying with our crews.
And that is?
That you can tell, you know, how well they're performing in their work environment.
So if somebody's under stress or somebody is exhibiting certain behaviors, you're there to see it?
Yeah. You can learn a lot about a flyer by spending time with them in the cockpit, how well they're performing, how they're handling stress, how they handle the in-flight duties. It really says a lot about an individual's capabilities watching them when they're stressed like that.
When you're doing your duties, are you actually clearing people to fly as well?
That's my primary assignment.
Okay.
Yeah, my primary assignment is to evaluate all the astronauts and the flight crews and report on their condition with a recommendation of whether or not they should be on flying status or not. And of most importance is, you know, whether or not they're certified to be on a long-duration space mission. But it's also crucial that I take care of our flyers. You know, we fly high-performance aircraft at Johnson Space Center, and we probably also have one of the oldest populations of high-performance aircraft pilots. So it's really important for the organization that we keep an eye on them and make sure that they're able to do those jobs.
So what kinds of things are you looking for in those pre-flight physicals?
Mostly with pre-flight physicals, like with astronauts, you know, we know these individuals very well. We've studied their medical conditions. You know, if something comes up, you know, we find it. So it's really a question of if a medical condition is identified, can we decide, you know, is that going to be a condition that is safe to let them go on a mission for 6 months? And, you know, we have to evaluate, you know, are they going to develop sudden incapacitation? Are they going to need some medical care that we can't provide up there? Or is the mission itself going to adversely impact their health that it's not going to be good for them to do it? So we have to think about all those things. It's not to say that you know, these physical examinations are different than what you get at your doctor's office, but we do tend to identify things earlier because we're looking at them so carefully.
And you have a smaller population to look at, I would assume. You know, you don't have a huge practice.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You know, my personal practice is probably in the range of 300 people to 400 people, and 50 of them are active astronauts, and probably 60 of them are non-astronaut flight crew. And, you know, the thing about those people is they go to the doctor. You know, you or I have a choice of whether or not we want to go, but they have to come see me at least once a year, and some of them twice a year.
So what kinds of things would disqualify someone for any mission? You know, what are some of the common things that would be a red flag for you?
Well, you have to be careful. I mean, because it's really not necessarily the medical condition that disqualifies somebody. You could say, for example, oh, if you have diabetes, you're going to get disqualified. We don't really think about things that way. It's really, okay, well, if somebody has a medical condition that they need a medicine that needs to be refrigerated and we don't have a refrigerator in space, well, we can't qualify them. Or, you know, we don't disqualify somebody that if they're overweight, but we do in the sense that, you know, for our current missions, you have to be under 95 kilograms in order to ride in the Russian reentry vehicle. So, you know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, 6'10" and skinny as a beanpole and weigh 96 kilograms, you're too heavy. So, you know, those are the types of things we think about. The other thing is we have to worry about the risk of sudden incapacitation. You know, if you have somebody that's doing great, but, you know, they have a cardiovascular lesion that could suddenly cause problems, you know, there's no medical care in space. So we really can't take the risk of putting them up there and jeopardizing the mission. So those are the thought processes we go through.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might think of, you know, the Star Trek model where there's a doctor on board, but there isn't.
There is not. But that's not to say that there isn't medical care that's available. You know, they can speak to us down in Johnson Space Center at any time. They actually even have a telephone. And you know, I've received more than one phone call from up there, luckily just mostly calling to say hello or try to prank order a pizza.
But, can you have it delivered fast?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, if there's something where you need a, some type of blood test or an x-ray, those types of things, we don't have it up there. And, you know, if there was something that required the services of a real surgeon, they'd have to come back down. You know, the trick of it is to, if something like that were to happen, to identify whether or not you could handle it up there. And if the answer is no, bring them back. Thank goodness we've never had to do that.
What is, and I'm obviously not asking for names, but what is the most, for you, the scariest thing that you've had to deal with medically? Was there anything where you thought, I don't know how we're going to handle this?
Well, you know, the hardest part of my job is the fact that people die. You know, I've seen several astronauts die in my career. I was friends with the individuals that died on the Columbia mission. I've had other astronauts die in general aviation accidents. You know, the hard thing about these things is that there's nothing that I can do. You feel powerless when these things happen. And that's the thing about spaceflight and aviation is that people generally tend to be totally okay or they're not okay at all. And that's hard to deal with.
How did you get interested in doing this? How did your medical career go in this direction?
You know, it's really strange. I just came from my 20th medical school reunion and I was talking to my classmates and they asked me what I was doing and I told them. They said, you know, Jim, you were always talking about spaceflight and aviation. So that's amazing that you did that. But I don't remember that. I don't remember talking about it. But I have always been interested in aerospace and spaceflight and those things. But my path to NASA has been pretty roundabout. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I was in medical school even. A lot of my classmates wanted to be general practice doctors, and I knew that just wasn't for me. So I, after some decision-making, decided to go into emergency medicine. And during my training, I enjoyed it, but I realized it wasn't the be-all and end-all for me, and it wasn't what I considered my life's vocation. But one of my friend's girlfriends at the time pointed out an ad in a medical journal for space medicine training down at Johnson Space Center. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that sounds really interesting. And I went down there and I interviewed. And after some period of time, I convinced him to take me on as a trainee. And, you know, as I during my training, a lady that was working in the clinic, she got hired to be an astronaut. And there was a sudden opening. And I just happened to be the guy that was standing behind the door when they opened it. And I walked in and the rest is history. And here I am.
How much training did you need at Johnson Space Center in addition to what you had already done?
Most of it was developing an awareness of the differences to human physiology that aviation and spaceflight cause. You know, it's taken me a long time to appreciate that. You know, it's a new science. And we really don't necessarily know everything we need to know. So a lot of it has really been on-the-job training over years. I came in already with strong clinical skills and those types of things. But it's only over time that my colleagues and I have learned what can happen in spaceflight.
And some of those things are not good that can happen to the human body.
That is true. You know, the main thing is it's an engineering issue. And space is a completely inhospitable environment for human life. But, you know, if one can provide a habitable environment, it's really not a bad environment at all. As long as you have the right elements for survival, the right temperature, oxygen, pressure, those things. But, you know, there is some adaptation that has to happen when you're in space.
Such as?
You know, your body has to get used to no gravity. And, you know, people can get motion sickness as they adapt through that process. So people don't feel well for the first several days. Without countermeasures, exercise countermeasures, being in space is less exercise than anything on the Earth that I can imagine. So that's great. If you really want to be a couch potato, I suggest going to space. You don't even need the couch.
But, right, because you could just float.
You could just float there. But, you know, in order to keep your muscles and bones in reasonable health, you have to exercise for several hours a day in order to maintain their integrity. So when you come back, you can rehabilitate and resume a normal life.
Isn't it true, though, that you still have bone loss if you're in space, you know, for a long time, that doesn't come back?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. You know, we've learned with our countermeasures that people really maintain pretty good bone density. We have not done the studies to find out what happens if you just left somebody up there with no exercise. You know, the Russians used to have less exercise equipment in some of their previous space modules, and they had people stay up in space for over a year. And those individuals did okay, but, you know, we just don't have the numbers and the experience. But it's just an area that we've decided that we don't want to explore. We prevent that.
So once you leave here, you're back for your 20th anniversary. Do you have another crop of astronauts and flyers that you have to see? What's next?
Well, you know, when I go back on early tomorrow morning, I'll walk in and I've got several people that need medical evaluations. So I'll go take care of those and get people ready for a presentation to our medical boards coming up. And it's unfortunate, but I think I'm going to have to go flying one of these days with some of our flight crews and make sure they're doing okay.
Yeah, I can tell you're really upset about that part.
Oh, man. It's rough supporting the taxpayer, making sure our flyers stay in shape.
Exactly.
Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody has to do it. Now, if you had a chance to go to the space station, would you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be incredibly exciting. You know, going up there and participating in a space mission would be fantastic. It would be neat. It's not in the cards for me, but—
Why not?
I'm not an astronaut.
You know, so you'd have to go through that training first.
You know, the training process is pretty onerous to be an astronaut. You know, first you have to be selected, and then you go through a year and a half basic familiarization, which is a very involved training process. Then you go into the generic astronaut pool and do different jobs within NASA until you're assigned to a mission. And then it's a 2 to 3 year intensive mission-specific training program. So you're looking at 5 years of pretty intensive training interspersed with other job activities. So there's a lot that goes into doing a mission. You know, it's not like you can just walk in off the street and get launched 2 weeks later like you see in the movies.
Right, except that you've been in there for a while. I was just wondering if you're not going to throw your hat in the ring?
At this point in my life, that time has moved beyond me. There are other things that have more importance to me. And honestly, I think I'm a little bit old for it. I'm 45, and to me, I think I'd rather let younger people step in and do that, and I'll just try to take care of them as best I can.
On the way back down, yes.
Yeah, that's good enough for me.
Well, it's such a pleasure to meet you and to have you in the studio. Welcome back to Milwaukee.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Jim, best of luck with everything in the future, and if you're back this way, stop by.
Great. Thanks a lot.
UW-Milwaukee graduate Jim Locke is a flight surgeon for NASA. He's based at the Johnson Space Center in Texas. He was back in town recently to speak at his alma mater.
One last break, and then our auto contributor talks about what he'd like to see in 2015 models and what's already there. That's when Lake Effect returns on WUWN.